What's going on, everyone? This is the Go Along Podcast. Man, am I jacked for our special guest right here, making it as real as we can. If we really could do this, Ramon, right, I'd be down there in Nashville, maybe at Winners and Losers, be about, you know, 2-3 beers in. But we'll try to make do in the Zoom world. Ramon Foster, 11-year vet with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and now he's crossed over to the dark side. He has joined sports media as the co-host of the J. Martin Ramon Show in Nashville, Tennessee. Love going on with you guys. Ramon, welcome.
Man, I appreciate it. I know the invite has always been open, but we finally connected, and I'm here with you. And I'll just say this about you being in Nashville. It is hot, okay? So wherever you are, stay there, okay, until this actually pulls back, because we go to Winners and Losers, but let me tell you this, we'd be sweating on the walk there is all I would say, man. It's steaming down here, so stay cool.
Probably because you're picking up some Hattie B's hot chicken on the way over, right? That's right around the corner, I think, from Winners and Losers.
It is, and I'll say this, if you're eating hot chicken in this weather, you're probably the spawn of Satan, okay, because those two should not mix. I'll just throw that out there for you, man. I wouldn't be a fan of it.
I mean, I tell everybody, I act like I'm this, you know, Nashville expert. I'm anything but just going there a handful of times, Midtown, right? Midtown, yeah. Over Broadway, 10 out of 10 times.
Am I wrong? God. No, 100%. Like, it's good to see what Broadway is here because it's a show. Like, it's legitimately a show. I don't care if it's early March or November. If you go out on a Saturday night here, it's going to be a good time on the street. It's a matter of do you want to be there amongst all those people, because it's going to be a variation of a lot of different things you're going to see. But what Nashville is, and you know this too, it's an entertainment town now, and it's a midway point, so that you don't have to go to Vegas if you're looking for a good time. You just go right to Nashville on the Southwest flight, straight flight for the most part, and have the same amount of fun.
So you're from Ripley, Henning, Tennessee. Where exactly are you from originally?
It's Lauderdale County in Tennessee, but I was raised in Henning, Tennessee. I went to high school in Ripley. Ripley was a school that I was associated with going to college. So I say Ripley, Tennessee, same county. One is right beside the next, and there's no real difference if I drove you through one or the other.
Got it. Because I remember seeing you pop up in Tennessee, and I didn't even know you were from there. I figured we'd be, you know, hearing you talking Steelers in Pittsburgh, in the Pittsburgh area, but you can talk Steelers anywhere, and now you got the Titan fans to
blab with, right? Yeah, for sure. Pittsburgh is definitely my second home, and I was born and raised here in Tennessee. Love the state, man. And I think that was a little bit of me coming back. And to be honest with you, I enjoyed Pittsburgh a lot. And I'll say this too, it's probably like the Buffalo area where you get the access to big city attractions and stuff like that in Pittsburgh, but it's very blue collar. Like, you can go there and just be a guy. And it's a city that loves its sports. It's a city that, look, if you're a hard worker, you can be appreciated there. And you don't have to do anything crazy. It's not like being in like the New Jersey area or going to LA where you got to drive a Ferrari or a Rolls Royce or anything like that. You can just be you in an F-250 truck or a simple car. Like, and that's what I appreciate about Pittsburgh. Me coming back here to Tennessee was mainly because, one, Nashville is growing like crazy, and I actually like that type of growth too. But it's home for me. My family's about 2.5 hours away. My wife's family's right down the street. And I just wanted to be back here, you know, in a city that's buzzing. So I don't know what later in life is going to hold. I might end up moving back to Pittsburgh. Who knows, man?
Yeah, you're always a conquering hero in Pittsburgh, right? You can go back for the reunions and all that good stuff. But I always tell people, I think we've talked about it on your show. So when I was at Bleacher Report doing a lot of features on the Steelers, I think like Le'Veon Bell, when he was breaking onto the scene, that run. And then I did a longer story on Mike Tomlin. I always felt like this magnetic pull to Ramon's locker. Like you're sitting there. You're like this wise Buddha, just post it up. And if you wanted to learn anything about a teammate, a coach, you'd go there. But I always felt bad. I'd go to Ramon Foster, and it's tell me about something other than you every single time. So
yeah,
we should talk about you a little bit here, shouldn't we? Like your rise, your career.
You know what's crazy is I'm one of those people. I'll big up everybody else, but to talk about me, I don't want to say it's weird, but it's kind of just one of those situations where it's like, well, I guess I never do, so it's gonna feel a little different, man. But that's me, though. I lend myself to people like all the time, not just like I'm some crazy servant of people, but I like to see people smile. I like to see people have a good time. If the room is quiet and everybody's, you know, trying to figure out what's next, I'm usually going to try to spark that conversation to figure out what's next. So that's always kind of just be my approach. I'm a second child / middle child. And you know how that goes sometimes is you always try to please people. And that's always been me. It's the way I played for my teammates. That's the way I kind of was a NFLPA rep because I enjoyed that, helping guys out, figuring out what's next. Even in my retirement, I'm still, you know, tapped into Pittsburgh's locker room. I still have guys hit me up about, you know, well, what am I supposed to do as far as, you know, benefits post-football? I enjoy that type of stuff, man. So, and plus I like a good time too.
You could always explain complicated, deep things in like a very digestible way. I remember whether it was like, you know, blocking for this running back who almost comes to a complete stop behind you, or yeah, Mike Tomlin and the way he just built that system. But it did seem like you kind of just embraced being a spokesman for the team. And I imagine I'm not alone. You're probably holding court for, you know, the local people, the national people, everybody.
Yeah, and this is the other part too. I guess it comes down to a matter of respect that if you can get people to unbuckle a little bit and loosen up and just realize, like, I feel like a lot of time, and I actually got this from Marquise Pouncey, just, you know, it kind of made me lean into it a little bit more. We were at a place having dinner one night, and it was funny. Like, I was like, Pouncey, man, you get hounded all the time. Like, we'd be together, but they want to go talk to the all-pro guy, okay? Which, no bigger than me. Do your thing. I was like, Pounce, man, you get hounded all the time. He was just like, Mom, we only get a certain window with this stuff. He was like, so if we don't lean into it and buy into the aspect that, look, we might be the only NFL guy they'll ever meet in their life, he was like, then we're doing ourselves a disservice. He was like, why do we do this? I was like, just for the money? And that's how, you know, it kind of changed my mindset even more that even I'm a Pittsburgh Steeler covering the Titans, I've had more people come up to me as, you know, fans of their teams, the Titans, which I found out here in Nashville, they hate the Steelers, okay? So for my interaction to them, anytime I've met, you know, one or two of them in public, I always just lend myself to them and have a conversation. Because one thing they'll tell you, you know, it's rare they get a chance to see guys that are in the NFL and have that interaction to a person that covers their team. So I always tell people, man, never fly above anybody. Like, you really got to be embedded in what you're doing and how you go about your business. And no matter how important you think you are, there's always somebody that's more important, or they are alluded to be more important than you too. And it's not to minimize yourself, but it's just, look, I'll tell anybody, one, be good to people. Just be a guy. Like, why go in a room and expect all the cameras to go on you? You know,
great life lesson for anybody, right? Like,
you know, and certain people operate like that, and that's fine. But you'll catch more people and impact more people too, through having conversations, to having understanding and empathy for folks, to whereas a lot of guys hold themselves way higher than they should. I've seen guys that, you know, be practice squad only guys that if you walked around them, they were all pro Hall of Fame / guys. I'm like, just be a dude. I swear, you know, and Troy Polamalu was like that. Just, he was a guy. He didn't, you know, wasn't loud, wasn't over the top. He couldn't wait to serve. I hit up Troy whenever he retires. Like, Troy, man, I never got a jersey from you. He was like, send me your address. And just like that, you know, so who am I to be above somebody when I got a guy like Troy Polamalu that'll send me an autographed jersey, who's a first ballot Hall of Famer? So it's, know who you are as a person, but always, you know, stand back and appreciate other people too, no matter what position you're in.
I can remember talking to Vince Williams at one point in the back of the locker room. Yeah. And he said that locker room just has a way, you know, with Mike Tomlin and his whole staff and all the players, of just like weeding out that kind of person, right? If there's somebody in there that isn't a dog, I know we overuse that term, but is somebody in there that isn't going to punch you in the mouth, somebody in there that isn't ready for that back alley brawl, that's going to put in that work and hit in practice and do that dirty. They don't last long in Pittsburgh. No. How did you see that kind of manifest itself day to day?
So I went undrafted to Pittsburgh, and my ride was a craziest. I'm talking about a crazy ride I've ever had. And I'm sure it's been a lot of other players that have that ride too, but I ended up getting a grade back from Pittsburgh after I got there, and they showed me my draft slip. They showed me how they evaluated me, and I went undrafted, but they had a 3-5 on me. They actually ended up picking a guy in the third round that year that we played in the same position. So they didn't lie. It was a matter of a separator of one stat versus another of with me versus him. And so to have that idea going into camp as an undrafted guy, and I'll never forget, it was Mark was his one of the main scouts there. He told me, he was like, we had a higher grade on you. We're kind of lucky to have. I was like, yeah, whatever. You know, I never believed him. But the moment I retired, they sent me that paper. But going through that process, I just had a kid with my girlfriend, now wife. I had a young child then. So I'm basically in survival mode in a sense. And one of the best advice I ever gotten from anybody was from my former agent. He told me, he was like, Ramon, immediately after draft, I probably had about 13 teams call me wanting to sign me from, you know, to a priority free agent. Jets, Browns, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, just a whole bunch of other teams. And he said, it's your decision. He was like, but I'll tell you this, Pittsburgh is a land of opportunity. If you go there and you ball out and you're nasty, you're going to make that team. And I was like, all right, let's do it. So I get in, go to camp, and it was a turning point in training camp for myself that really made me realize that it's a game, but it's still a business. Coach James Mitchell is a famous D-line coach in Pittsburgh. And Coach Mitch is what we call him. I'm sure you heard some of the D-linemen call him that while you was reporting in the locker room. But in my rookie year, it was two guys wearing 73. It was me and a defender wearing 73. He was drafted. I was undrafted. And Coach Mitch had us line up to go against each other. Of course, rookie versus rookie. You got on his number. He got on your number. And he told us at that point, he said, all right, I hope y'all realize what's going on here. We got 273s. But at the end of the camp, it can only be one. And I went, oh, it's got real. I got a young kid. I got a family I'm trying to support with my girlfriend, now wife. And I'm like, man, I got to make this happen. And from that point on, the switch turned on as far as just surviving, as far as understanding what Pittsburgh was. So when you ask about that mindset, I knew this. I didn't know the entire playbook, but I knew if every single rep that I had, I didn't care what it was. If I went 100%, I gave myself a fair shot. Lo and behold, I made the roster that year and for the next 10 years right after that. And not patting myself on the back, but it gives a mindset to what that locker room is. They don't care how you get there, man. They appreciate somebody that's going to work hard, somebody that's going to do stuff the right way, too. And if you do have an extreme talent, like a guy like Antonio Brown, you're able to be tolerated because at the end of the day, our business is football. That's what we do, you know, and you're paid to win. That goes along with it. But for myself personally, that journey that I took on being a guy that was unknown under the radar to turning into a double-digit starter in the city of Pittsburgh, that franchise, man, I think Coach Tomlin has done a real good job of setting, I guess you're saying, what's the baseline of what it takes to be in that locker room. And Vinny was right. You really got to be a guy. If you are just doing it for the glitz and glamour, you won't make it. As flashy as some guys are in the locker room at times, those dudes at the core of their heart is they're going to go get you by any means necessary, man. And if you heard a recent podcast with Coach Tomlin, listen to him.
Yeah,
you kind of get an understanding of where he comes from about the game. And everybody that's ever walked through their locker room has kind of held that mindset.
I hope everybody has a chance to listen or watch that entire, you know, Mike Tomlin podcast. It was so fascinating to see him open up in a way. I hadn't seen him open up publicly because
not like that.
Right, right. Not like that. But he's threaded that needle of, you know, guys love playing for him as of being a player's coach, but being disciplined as hell. I mean, back to his Vikings defensive coordinator days when he's, what, 33, 34? I remember Chad Greenway telling me, like, he commanded the room. Like, you did not want to let him down. He let you know when you screwed up, and he was on your ass. As a younger than the players themselves, I think so many coaches try to find that balance and fail miserably. I mean, he's mastered it.
Ty, it's weird, man. And I've only played for one coach in the NFL. That's all I can tell you, man. So seeing his blueprint of what it takes and how you survive and watch guys that played for him, played under him, some probably coached with him, probably may not have liked him because I don't know what their relationship was. But from coach to player, the philosophy stays the same. The standard stays the same. The wording of what he says stays the same. You mentioned, you know, him commanding the room. Every day in the meeting, he walk into the room. He might have a piece of paper in his hand that he's read, you know, from one of his assistants, and he walks in loud. Man, you know, like, good morning, man, to command. Look, I'm in here. But it's also just the transparency of work, too. I've heard guys going to work, man, and they are in a position that they don't know if they're going to make the team, if they're about to get cut, if they're safe. And one thing that he did going back to my rookie year, I'll never forget. This was another business moment for me that was in the classroom, the meeting room. I got worked like the first day in pads. The first story I told you was actually later in camp when everything started to settle in. But like the first couple of days in pads, I got worked. Okay. Brett Kiesel. Okay. Casey Hampton. Okay. Oh. Travis Kersey. They were really having the time with me. And I knew I had a bad day, too. So we're in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, St. Vincent College. We walk into the classroom, and he put up the slides. And second slide comes up was mine. And he put the red arrow on my face and was like, Mo, we had a day, didn't we? And he showed every clip that me getting worked. And I was just, like, taken back in the sense of just like, man, I'm out of here. And
you think you're done right then? I'm done.
Todd, listen to me. I was done. Okay. I was, why me? Why are you calling me out? I'm a rookie. I'm trying to figure this out.
You're one of 90 at that point, undrafted, nobody.
Hey, why are you picking with the undrafted guy? But he said something, and listen to me, Ty. He said this last phrase to me, and every day at practice for the next 4 years, he said it. He said, Moan, at the end of that meeting in 2009, said, Moan, don't take it. And all everything that was going through my mind from the next day out was don't take it. I don't care what you got to do to not get put up on that big board anymore, but don't take it. Every day of practice, he walking there, Moan, don't take it. Day two, Moan, don't take it. A year later, Moan, don't take it. It became so much a thing that he just was repetitive. But as far as like hammering down his philosophies of what he expected, though, Ty, he's consistent across the board with his players. You don't have to guess if you're going to be active on game day. He's going to tell you if you're going to be active on game day. You don't have to understand how, hey, am I close to getting cut? He'll put up a guy and say, you missed this play. I got this guy that was inactive last week. If you don't make this play this week, that guy going to be in your spot. But for me, as a young guy, not understanding his philosophies and how he coached, it hardened me. I will say that it made me a little bit numb to dogging players out. It probably helped my growth a little bit. The survival instincts of being in the league, because, you know, like I know a lot of guys don't want to be out of the league. They want to fulfill their dreams long enough to where when it's time for them to bow out, it's really not a big issue. And that's what I wanted to do. And just, you know, having that mindset of that, you got to be consistent. You got to be repetitive. You got to kind of have a little nastiness of what you're doing made me kind of create this philosophy a little bit for myself. Ty, if it's a game between me and you, I'm going to step on your neck to get what I want. Afterwards, I'm going to shake your hand. We can be cool, but between these lines and how we compete, I don't give a damn about you. Afterwards, we go get some wings, get some beer, whatever you want to do. But it kind of, and I've kind of taken that approach with my kids a little bit. I got some big, tall kids, man. I got a 13-year-old that's like 6'4 right now. My 10-year-old is like 5'1", 5'2". So I got big kids. And so a lot of the times we run into stuff as parents where we try to create paths for our kids and tell them what they should and shouldn't do. And one thing I vow to never, ever do, because I've even seen guys in the NFL like this, where the big guy becomes, air quotation marks, soft, or he ain't as nasty as he want to be. And I tell my kids, look, it's not our fault that they're that small. If they want to step up, you go dog them. I'd rather pull them back than to say, hey, whoa, no, We don't live like that. We don't do that, because disadvantages are common in life. Why we got to pull back? Because that guy is a foot smaller than you. Why? Because if they get the opportunity to get you, they will. And that's just been really my approach to, I ain't gonna say life in a sense. Like I told you, I'm a giver. You get whatever I have if it's there for you. But as far as when it comes down to work and attaining certain stuff, I'm all about that attitude, you know, and then Pittsburgh kind of helped me with that as an adult.
It's, you probably have talked to Vince about this. I remember him, he was breaking down his son's like Pop Warner game. He said, he's telling his son like to go kill him, like get hit him. And the other parents are almost taken aback. Like, oh my God, how can you use that language? And it's like, hey, you're putting your kid out there. You're playing this sport. That's football. And I don't know. I guess society at large is getting softer. Mentalities are getting softer, but even the NFL has gotten softer. You know, through your 11 years, you probably saw it. But Mike Tomlin and the Steelers stayed consistent, I feel like, with, you know, being mentally tough and physically tough. Your practices are just different even.
A funny story, you mentioned the practices. We had a joint practice, I think, like maybe 2011 with the Buffalo Bills, man. And we're in camp 2011-12, whenever those. We supposed to have two back-to-back, but a coach got fired, I think. Was Rex Ryan the coach there, one of the Ryans?
Somebody got fired. 11 would have been pre-Rex. I think we're talking Dick Geron, maybe?
Maybe. It may have been him, but we did it one
Chan
year.
Gailey? Chan Gailey,
I forget who. It was Chan. It was whatever year it was. We had a joint practice with them, and I'll never forget. We're out there practicing, and most of the times you protect your teammates. Well, with us, we were a young team, relatively, kind of transitioned some of the older guys out. And they came to our joint practice, Ty, and let me tell you, they looked at us like we was crazy. We were out there full tackling. And you could hit everybody except for the quarterback. You could do everything that you wanted to do in our practice because that's how we built. And they looked at us like, this is how y'all practice daily? We were like, yeah, something wrong with it? Lo and behold, we were pretty much archaic at that point, okay? Nobody was practicing like that. And it got heated out there, man. My guy, Kyle Williams, he wasn't practicing, but he was out there talking a whole lot of trash, okay?
Really?
Between him, Kelvin Beecham, who's the defensive outside linebacker from TCU?
Jerry Hughes.
With the Bills. And what's that?
Jerry Hughes.
So this may have been 12, 13, whatever it was. Yeah, but Jerry Hughes, listen to me. Jerry Hughes and Kelvin Beecham went at it so much so that, like, the entire practice had to get broken up. They were at – because our mindset was we go hard no matter what. Like, if you get me, then I'm going to get you the next play. And that was just – that's how we've operated, man. Nobody's full tackling in practice the way we do in camp because it creates that old school mindset a little bit.
I can only compare it to, you know, being on the Green Bay Packers beat when I was at the Journal Sentinel, you know, the Bills with Rex Ryan. And I mean, compared to everything that you're detailing, it was like a country club atmosphere. I mean, there wasn't much contact. There definitely wasn't tackling. There weren't hitting drills. I mean, they're that big like rubber ring thing, I guess they use like to work on form tackling, but you need to like condition the body for violence. I get wanting to prevent injuries, but like, By flipping that switch and all of a sudden it's September 9th and the bolts are flying. That's how you get hurt if you're not ready for that.
Exactly.
You better be doing those kind of Steeler practices.
It is, man. And I know that, you know, times have changed. Like you say, you learn to preserve. There's a 17th game right now also. But the aspect of football has to be there to have a good team. And I got to give it to the team in Buffalo. They have that. I've seen them play nasty. And I'll say this too. You know, the ones that have that type of respect around the league too, because other teams on film, they play them different. When they win against them, they celebrate a little bit different. I didn't care, you know, during my time playing, if we were playing a 1-14 Cleveland Browns team, we knew we was going to get their all simply because they wanted to beat us to reset their season and, well, to end their season at that point, but to also just set a precedent that, you know, it was going to be a physical game.
I got to ask, your last season was 2019, I believe, right?
Yeah.
You retired at 2020. That might have been the most impressive coaching job for Mike Tomlin, right? I mean, you lose Ben Roethlisberger early in the season. One of your assistant coaches tragically dies in training camp.
Yeah, Coach Drake.
Injury, right, Coach Drake. Injury after injury. I mean, I remember, you know, making the trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick. People thought the Steelers were nuts. Like, shouldn't you just be tanking and giving up on the season? But you go for it. And at one point, I want to say you guys were 8-5. With the Duck, Devlin Hodges.
With Duck, Devlin Hodges, man, at quarterback. That was awesome.
How in the hell did you guys persevere that season and get through?
If you hear the man talk, Coach Tomlin, he make you drink the Kool-Aid and just run through walls. Like, and then it's also the pride aspect of it too. That if we've heard so many times that if they can beat you, this was even coming from a Hall of Fame guy, Coach Munchak. You know, he came from the Tennessee Oilers, the Titans organization, and he used to tell us in meetings, hey, yeah, when we played the Steelers, that can make or break your season, because if we beat them, you can go home and say, well, at least we beat those guys. So you're that, like, it's kind of embedded in your DNA when it comes down to how you play the game, how you approach the game too. So to have your franchise quarterback out, you also have the first backup, Mason Rudolph, that was out for some time too, and then to run with Devlin Hodges, a.k.a. Duck, at quarterback, I'll say this, the defense backed us up big time. I was apologizing and thanking our defense a ton that year, specifically Minkah, Cam, and TJ Watt. Like, there was a bunch of other guys on that defense, but you just got to say, look, man, our bad. We're trying. We just don't have it. They pretty much were seen every time we go out offensively because you don't have Ben back there. I see now what the importance of having a franchise quarterback is. Like, watching what Josh Allen has done, what Patrick Mahomes has done, watching the way they feel about Herbert, like, having those type of guys resets your franchise. And us playing that year without Ben kind of brought a dose of reality to what it means to have the guy. You know, you walk into stadiums and say, oh, we're at least going to win half the games of the season. Everybody else got to do their part to win more. But when it comes down to having backups in, like, you know, Devlin Hodges, we go out to L.A. and beat a really good, let's be honest with you, San Diego Chargers team at that point, or L.A. Chargers team at that point. On Monday night football, too, nobody expected it. But the core of your team being really good, having guys that just find a will to win, was pretty good too. And it was also the pride aspect of guys didn't want Coach Tomlin to have a below 500 season. I know he don't give a damn about it, but that plays a part in it too, to never have a losing season as a player or a franchise under your coach. A lot goes into that.
Be remiss if we didn't talk about the man who's always in the headlines. I mean, Antonio Brown, you referenced it earlier on Mike's, I get it. That's the headline, right? You know, no way we're signing him. But then Mike Tomlin goes on and on to detail, like, just how hard of a worker Antonio Brown was, how fearless he was. As a player, all of that. What's, when you hear Antonio Brown, when you think about your time with him as a teammate, what your perspective, what you saw, it was, he as nutty and as crazy as the guy ripping his jersey off, his pads off, quitting in the middle of a game? Did you see that kind of stuff? Or is it, you know, the work ethic, one more than the other? What was your perspective on AB?
Well, it's a little bit of what people choose to buy into too. And I think AB would be the first one to say he kind of, you know, threw fuel on the fire when it came down to it. I'll give you the guy, AB, that I know, you know, was totally different with me, but we had a relationship. Me, myself, Marquise, and him exchange Christmas gifts every year. Every, you know, game, every away game, we go to his condo on Mount Washington, just sit back. He have his chef cook dinners for us, cook lunch for us before we left and everything else. He was very catering to us. And maybe he looked at me and Marquise as big brother types to him. So the respect factor was there. If I ever needed anything from AB, he did it. Heck, I got a personalized Pepsi machine, drink machine, like a full size one, because AB wanted to give me that for Christmas. You know, so there's been a whole bunch of, you know, conversations. I never forget sitting with him in 2010 in that sauna before Antonio Brown became AB, and just telling him, like, AB, just work. The cream eventually rises to the top. We're sitting in the steam room, just sitting back trying, big bro, why won't they play me? Why won't they do this? So he and my relationship is a little bit different than what everybody else's would probably say theirs was. So to see that guy kind of develop and kind of take off to a different level, I'll say this, I think he knew who he was before everybody else did. we used to play those Steeler basketball charity games around the city in the off season, and he had already had cameras following him, documenting everything that he'd ever done. Kind of the way if you saw that Kanye West documentary where people just follow. AB has that footage. I'm talking about probably on disc and not SD cards from 2010. He had that. And then I would say this too. Watching guys grow into that type of superstardom. Like Troy was a superstar. Everybody knew him. The hair, being the superstar, everybody knows him. But to see an undrafted, well, a six-round guy morph into a superstar and not just morph into one, but enjoy it also, it was different. We were sitting at a football game one time, man. Joey Porter's son, who's at Penn State now, we went to his high school football game, who's about to be a projected first-round cornerback. That's crazy.
Okay.
But Joey Porter Jr. is at Penn State. But we went to his football game, and it was probably 20 guys at the game, maybe 15, 20 guys at the game already. And everybody's chilling, everybody letting us do our thing. And then we hear this commotion by the gates, looking around like, what the hell is going on? It was Antonio walking in, and he had a crowd around him. It was probably late October, so it's starting to get colder in Pittsburgh. When he came up there with the crowd that he had, where we were sitting at, and he's just a teammate to us, but it got warm around us because there was so many people following him. Now, I just got to say this. Of course, some of the stuff can be inexcusable with how he acted, but for a person that had the trauma that he had growing up, finally accepted by people, and not just that, allowing you to do what you want to do, it can probably take off in a bad way. I'm not excusing it. But you got to think, if you don't have the right people around you to kind of govern how you view yourself and what you do, again, like what I said earlier, fly amongst people, not higher than people. It can go in a bad way, especially when you live in the public life, too. So there's two people. AB is the guy that I know that's very giving and kind of, you know, you see this other side of him. That's Antonio. But then you get AB that people just love. They covet. They idolize. That's balance right there, man, when you don't have it all there for yourself or those checks and balances.
He's a few days shy of turning 34. I mean, is he done? Do you think we see Antonio Brown in the NFL again?
I think this last stint probably got him. You know, leaving the way you did. You've heard the old saying, protect the shield. And Roger Goodell lives by it. NFL as a whole kind of lives by protecting the shield. If he signed, I'd be shocked. Do I think he still can play? Yes. The way he practices, the way he works, I don't know if I've seen anybody else that's been that talented, that worked that hard all the time. And I know I'm probably forgetting a guy too when it comes down to making that type of statement. But just in general, I don't know if I've seen anybody that works the way he does, like consistently nonstop. The best possibly overall athlete that I've ever seen, though, Martavis Bryant.
Martavis Bryant. There's a blast from the past. Another one. I mean,
yeah,
just tons of talent that wasn't able to, fulfill.
Yeah, it was. But it's just if you look at him, he's a created character on Madden. Well, Martavis at the height of just becoming the guy, you know, and he knew he was about to be. And you just get short-sighted. You lose focus a little bit when it comes down to his decisions, you know, as far as the drug protocol goes, documented.
Right.
And then you find yourself out of the league. And I mean fast. But the way that dude could jump, his body structure, the way he could run, and just how acrobatic he was in practice during the games, probably one of the best athletes I've ever seen in my life. Just face value. You know, Minka Fitzpatrick's unique. Troy was unique. I mentioned all those type of dudes. But as just far as overall unique athlete that you'd be like, yep, that's what I want a wide receiver to look like. It was Martavis Bryant.
Great stuff, Ramon. Man, it's good to see you. Great to have you. We got to do this again. We talk a lot on your radio show, so it's good to actually see you. We're going to have to bring the show to Nashville. I think that's the only next step here.
You promised me a good beer, and I'm still waiting on it. So, yeah, you got to bring it to Nashville.
Well, if you want to come up to Buffalo, I mean, we can do this at Hamburg Brewing Company, too.
What's the schedule looking like?
Yeah, you know, put it on J-Mart's tab. Just he can cover those expenses.
You are 100% correct. Put it on his tab.
The J Mart and Ramon show. So where can people listen? They can listen online too, right? If they're not local.
They can listen online. Yeah, 104.5 The Zone is our parent company. You can stream it on YouTube or on YouTube. You can always catch me retweeting the live links on Twitter. We're pretty much everywhere. If you want to stream it on your podcast too, Spotify, iTunes, everywhere. You can find us everywhere.
And it's easy at Ramon Foster. So you can find him right there on Twitter and follow those. And did I say something else?
No, that was it. Yeah,
just I said it right. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, you got all it right. You got it right. No,
I'm just. Well, you guys have a great rapport, man. It's a great show. I love it. Love popping thank on. You. So great to have you, Ramon. Thanks so much, man.
No doubt. And whenever you need me, just holler at me. I'll be back.